Welcome to the Brian D. O'Leary Show. This is your home for serious content amidst an unserious world. All right, Brian O'Leary back here with you. Today we have for you a second installment of a podcast I was on a few weeks back, the Minnesota Black Robe Regiment podcast. We gave you a little clip a few days ago, a couple weeks ago maybe. And went through kind of, I think where we left it off anyway, was I told TC, the host, one of the criteria on how I picked a college and had to do with applying to Penn State University. And I like their football uniforms. And ultimately, I'm glad I ended up going to Boston College. My life would not have been the same, and nor today would I. Would it be the same had I not done that? So I'm forever grateful for going 4 years on the Heights in Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts. Now, what we have for you today is I get into, or TC prods me into talking a bit about more about our U.S. presidents, we talk a little sports, we talk, well, a few other things. It's again, the second half of the first half of what we're talking with TC about the other day, or maybe not quite, and not necessarily divided into quarters like that. But anyway, we talk about some stuff and a little bit about my origin story in podcasting. Not too deep, but kind of how I got started back doing it once more. I think I've said on this show before, I was a sports podcast. We had a once a week sports podcast, and that's how I got involved in podcasting, but I've come to enjoy it just as a medium, and I enjoy podcasting about whatever comes to mind. And so with that, just enjoy what we got going with TC here on this show, and we will be back with you after we're done here.
Every one of my guests almost always finds a way to shock me and say something that I'd never heard before, and right early on, here we are.
Yeah.
So you start to transition away from your sports focus show, yeah, and you kind of start to delve into what a lot of people, I mean, if you look around the podcastosphere, a lot of people that got started then. And
it's, you know,
Clint Russell's a great example. I mean, Clint Russell kind of came out of nowhere, and I mean, that guy's contents exploded. With Liberty Lockdown.
Yeah.
And, but he did the same thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the whole focus of his show, was to talk about why he was opposed to the lockdowns. And, but it wasn't just coming from, you know, just this hardcore libertarian perspective or a hardcore, you know, Republican, you know, back, you know, mm-hmm, you know, Trump bot types. There were even people, you know, that were kind of a little slightly left to center who were like, this is a massive violation of our liberties, yeah, who really, you know, got involved and started to speak out. Mm-hmm. And, but you started a transition, but you, what I've noticed with your content, and, you know, maybe that was your goal all along, is as you're talking about things, you're not just talking about them from your own personal perspective in the sense of, well, here's why I'm against it. You actually kind of delve into the historicity of a lot of the characters you talk about. And mind-blowingly, recently you just, and this had nothing to do with, you know, the coup, we call COVID the coof on my channel, because okay, for some reason I've been able to avoid the algorithm when it comes to that too.
Okay.
Now I've said that, and I've said it enough times, I'll figure it out. But you brought up, in talking about liberty and freedom, you brought up Richard Milhouse Nixon and quoted extensively from his book and said, surprise, Nixon was actually very liberty oriented.
Well, yeah, I don't know if that was the conclusion I had. His words shocked me as well when I read them.
Right.
If you go back to the podcast to listen to that, but his words, but also I got quite a reaction. I've talked to several people about this. Nixon? What are you doing with Nixon? You know? And so I thought, it was President's Day, or Nick, I think it was President's Day when I picked up the book I'd had on my shelf for two decades that I'd never read. It was just like this nice hardcover book. And I'm like, I have a library of a bunch of stuff, and I have a whole section of like presidents, and, you know, pick them up every once in a while and read about them. But the more and more I get into it, I hate everyone. But I picked it up and I started reading, and I'm like, whoa, like this is written in 1980. So 5 years after he resigned the presidency. And the whole book, it's called The Real War. And he's talking about the specter of World War III is almost imminent back then with the Soviet Union and the West, essentially.
Right.
And
we grew up under the shadow of that in a way that a lot of people that we would even have as viewers or listeners would never understand.
Yeah. And so I'm reading this and I don't have it in front of me, but I've never heard a president, and granted, he didn't say it when he was the president of the United States, but I'd never heard a president even talk or write this way. Not even close. And it's, but again,
I'm looking at Eisenhower's exit speech.
Sure. A little bit. And George Washington a little bit. Yeah. And, but I mean, like we go from Washington to Nixon, or, you know, maybe a little Eisenhower in there to have somebody say something serious. And I don't know. So you're looking at it at a lens 43 years after the fact that it was written, and there's no bipolar world anymore, right? There's no communism versus the West. And that is the framework, like you said, that a lot of us grew up in. I mean,
I grew up 50 miles from Offutt Air Force Base, which was the home of the Strategic Air Command. Like we literally did drills. I don't know why. I don't know what we thought we were accomplishing, you know, hide under your desk.
Yeah. I don't remember doing that, but I remember my dad telling me that they had to do that in like the 50s and 60s.
Yeah. I grew up in a small town in Iowa. So it was like still the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
With all the drug problems of the 70s.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're kind of, you know, going through your metamorphosis, you know, coming out of your cocoon, your sports cocoon, and blossoming into this beautiful chrysalis of a butterfly of a social and political commentary. You've started to have multiple platforms now, as far as, you know, getting your voice out. So, Tell us about the different shows you have and then the endeavor that you're doing as well.
Sure. I would say that the kind of impetus to me starting to podcast again really stems from, I think it was about August, this last August, where I hadn't really podcasted since March. And, you know, I was still in this frame of mind that I started a sports podcast. So I'm a sports podcaster, but I don't really, it's not moving the needle for me right now. And so about a year ago, I've been involved in this program called the Tom Woods School of Life. And I know you're a fan of Tom Woods.
Love Tom's work.
And so I joined it. And sometime last summer, they started these entrepreneurship groups. So you meet once a week for an hour and a half with about 10 people in a small group, and people from all over the place. And, you know, I'm struggling. At this point, I'm doing internet or online marketing, email marketing, all this stuff. I kind of like really worked on my writing and copywriting and this, but I wasn't doing the podcast because I couldn't figure out how to make a sports podcast go, right? and so a couple of people in the group were like, dude, just go back to podcasting. You got the setup, and you know, my setup was kind of like this, you know, it's like I'm actually in my garage of all places, but I got the microphone for podcasting. I got like a little background with, you know, part of my library. And
ladies and gentlemen, I am not in my garage in Minnesota at all. You could tell that you're in warm climate.
Well, if 35 degrees every morning is warm in we're having a cold snap here in the Bay Area of California. It's terrible.
I go outside in shorts and a t-shirt when it's 35. Yeah, what are you talking? Sure.
Yeah.
But in the summer, if it drops down to 60, I'm like, man, it's cold. Shut the windows. So
Yeah.
So you got this group.
Yeah, this group. And they're
the
like,
school of life telling you, stop complaining and just do it.
Just do it. And like what you can do is do like a YouTube or an Instagram or whatever it is for a minute
you're
a day.
You're not doing TikTok videos, are you?
I tried, dude. I just like, yeah. And it's just like the more formats I'm doing, it's like the worse I do, I think. So I've concentrated on podcasting because I would say that in this group, they're like, yeah, just okay, go just start podcasting again. And I'm like, okay, well, I just set up my camera and did it and my microphone and all that and put out an episode. And it was just essentially me reading an email that I'd written and trying a new format. And so, well, hey guys, I did it. And they said, okay, what's your podcast about? And I said, I don't know. I don't know.
It's supposed to have a theme.
Right. And I said on the top of my, just off the top of my head, I said, I don't know what it's about, but my goal is eventually in the next year or so, roughly, I'm going to have 100 of you people on my show and we'll tailor the show to how that goes. And 100 of you people being members of the Tom Woods School. I've already got over a dozen. There's about, I think, 17 episodes published. I had a chance to do another interview with the aforementioned John Ziegler. As part of that, another.
But have you landed the great Tom Woods yet?
Well, my goal is on episode 50, halfway through, we're going to get Tom on the show. That's my goal. He hasn't actually agreed to do it, but we'll see. I mean, once he sees that, you know, he's got all these people within his school doing these great things. So anyway, yeah, and so I wasn't. My workflow was. Not good. I didn't really know how to do it. I just said, I'm going to do this podcast, right? With a bunch of people that I find interesting. And turns out that, you know, I have a big network within the Tom Woods School of people. But my thing was like, I'm going to do the show, schedule a time, cut the episode, release it. Well, you know, things happen and schedules, you know, don't quite overlap. And so like, I'm waiting to do these podcasts that I said I do. And eventually, I just decided, two things. One, I decided that I'm going to change my workflow where we're just going to record episodes and then put them out as I get them done and just kind of do the audio. But the second thought I had is like, I need to do this more because one of the facilitators in the group, Barbara Williams, who I actually had on my show, she actually said, what do you like doing? I said, well, I really enjoy my email writing, but I actually kind of like the podcasting more. I should do that more. Okay. So I started doing a show every day, Monday through Friday. And it's 10 to 30 minutes of me just talking. Really, again, what's the show about? Well, it's me talking about whatever I find interesting that day or that has been interesting to me forever. And I finally get a chance to know.
Which is really my show is just me finding whatever is interesting to complain about in the state of Minnesota. Well, around, you know, United States right now. Mm-hmm. I don't complain a lot, but a little occasionally. The thing that really struck me about your content when I dug into it was there's clearly a love and a passion for the values of this nation. And I want to say this. We are anybody who, and you're kind of a Buchananite based
Correct.
Off of our conversation.
Pat Buchanan. Yeah. He's my hero.
Who is really, He's kind of the quintessential every guy's voice of conservatism, like, but not the neoconservative or even the kind of the normie con conservative values. He's kind of the every man's voice of William Buckley. I know he's your hero, but Buckley is he's often this, you know, the patches on his elbows and his corduroy, you know, suit tops and stuff, but Buchanan reaches across a wide spectrum of people and says things that, you know, even people who are left-leaning centrist and left of center types really go, yeah, his values are traditionally American without being reactionary, without being sold on the idea of a, you know, just pure American greatness just because we're America.
Right.
And I think that's what was the appeal when you listen to him speak. that was the appeal to so many people.
There's a whole philosophy undergirding whatever he says, you know,
right.
and tradition. Absolutely. And
do you see him more of as a offshoot of like a Burnham or?
I don't know much Burnham. I've only really gotten a little bit into him over the last few years, but he's his own thing. I mean, he was influenced by the aforementioned William F. Buckley in his early days when National Review was really the only kind of conservative, if you will, operation.
Back before it went weird.
And he's really kind of, I don't know if you know who Russell Kirk is.
Yeah,
but,
I know.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't know him. But
I don't know
him,
if many of the listeners would know who he is, but like that's kind of the strain of conservatism that he comes down on. And, you know, frankly, I was listening to a podcast yesterday, actually with Tom Woods and Paul Gottfried, who's another like intellectual hero of mine. And they were talking about this whole, they call it paleo conservatism. Gottfried just came out with a collation of essays where he was the editor, I believe, of all these. And there's a strain of thought that goes from what we now call paleo conservatism and paleo libertarianism, which I'm kind of like in both camps.
It's me.
Yeah. Because I'm a huge fan of Lou Rockwell, and actually Lou published a piece of mine back in, I think it was September, that really kind of launched me into like thinking, I had something to say, but now I really feel like I'm comfortable saying it. And you know, I, on my Substack page, one morning I submitted the article a few days prior, and I was like, we'll see if Lou wants to publish this. And I woke up one morning and my email was like chock full of like new subscription. I'm like, what in the world happened? What did I do? I didn't like, and it was Lou put it on the front page, and then a bunch of people went to my Substack, and I was like, okay, well now maybe I'm a little more comfortable. And that was only a few months ago, really. So I didn't feel bad about saying what I thought about things.
Isn't that funny? You can you say what you think, and then you got to wonder if people are gonna hold it against you in this world today.
Well, and if they do, I don't care. You know, I've got to the point where I don't care. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's trust me. After everything I've been through with the launch of this show, or you know, and all of its iterations now with the, you know, I do a TC and Friends Monday Night Musings, which is really where I wanted to bring you on, but you've got kids and a life, so yeah. I can't be bothered to, you know, that's all tongue in cheek because I know what it's like to have kids and a life. So, just for those of you that are listening, you can find Brian's Substack at BrianDOleary.substack.com, and it is in a banner down here, and it's also in the description of the video. So I would strongly encourage you to go over there and check that out. And, take a look at what he has to say. You have really kind of started to talk, and I've noted this, and I don't know how long that's been going on, but you're not afraid to push the envelope on some things. And one of our interactions here this last week was we interacted a little bit on Lincoln. Before I go too far into discussing that, I'm going to ask the question: how much have you commented in general conversation or in any of your content? Have you commented on Lincoln and the normal perception of Lincoln? And what do you think the average American's perception of Lincoln is?
Well, let me take the second part first.
Absolutely.
The average American, not to speak for them, but from my impression, is that Lincoln is a hero who freed the slaves and saved the Union. I think the historical record, on the other hand,
It's fine.
He did not free the slaves. It was correct. Not until after he died that slaves in the United States were free. And frankly, he didn't save the Union. He kind of torpedoed it to a large degree. And I don't believe he's a hero. He was a railroad lawyer, and back in those days, that was like one of the worst things you could be. But anyway,
it was the ambulance. It was the ambulance chasing for you know.
I mean, he just enriched himself with, it's just, he's not an impressive guy. I think maybe because he was assassinated in the time of war, the legend built, and granted, it was a, I don't even call it a civil war, really.
It wasn't a
second American Revolution to some degree. And of course, it's super brave to be against slavery today. But most of the people that are against slavery today wouldn't have even opened their mouth back then. That's how cowardly a lot of
North or South.
No, oh yeah, North or South.
Yeah, North or South.
I mean, honestly, yeah. And anyway, of course we're against slavery. That does that, like, it just goes without saying. But anyway,
except you have to say it.
Yeah, right.
It's like, right. It's like it goes without saying, except you can't.
Yeah,
you can't not say it. And that's the kicker, is that and that's what really, I mean, I had already started to pay attention to your stuff,
mm-hmm.
but when you interacted, I never know what I'm going to get.
Mm.
You know, it's the Forrest Gumpery of American history, is commenting on Abraham Lincoln and the American Civil War.
And
you literally don't know what the responses are going to be.
I'm not one of these guys who like will just tear down Lincoln for no reason, but
right.
I do think that he's, like, honestly, if you look at the record, in the bottom five of American presidents, not on the top four like Mount Rushmore has,
right.
But the funny thing is, it's the propaganda too, that, you know, I grew up in Southwest Portland. Our two high schools, by the time I got, we had three at one point, and then they the public high schools, government high school, were Woodrow Wilson High School and Abraham Lincoln High School. And those are, like, honestly, like, you start reading history, those are two of the bottom five presidents of all time, of what they did to the nation and the culture and everything. But anyway, like, getting back to your earlier point.
Try to get people to name one thing, policy-wise or economically at all. Mm-hmm. that Lincoln did outside of be president during that conflict, and at all, how do I want to say this? That wasn't him overreaching, mm-hmm. and taking to the executive branch,
yeah.
powers it didn't have. There's nothing.
Yeah,
he did nothing outside of the Civil War.
Yeah,
nothing.
It ultimately changed the nation in a way that it was another revolution, but the side that was trying to not be a revolutionary, they were just trying to split, right? The South wanted to go essentially peaceful. They weren't invading the North, but they wanted to go peacefully, and you can't do it. And it's like today with the topic of national divorce. It's like,
right.
No, you can't go. You can't
right.
go. You have to stay here. And it's like, why? You hate me anyway. Why do you want me here? You know?
Right.
And I talked about it last week a little bit, and I was like, it doesn't have to go with territory. We have there's been a secession of the heart for many Americans, and it's like, I don't want to be associated with you Biden groupies.
I don't want to be associated with most Trump groupies.
Yeah,
so.
Certainly. Yeah. Well, that's a secession of the heart, too. And getting back to what you are, the first part of that question.
Thanks for remembering. Gone.
No, it's fine. But you asked if I talk about it a lot. And it's like, no, not really, because it's like it's like a historical subject that most people haven't read about.
They're just not versed enough in history
about,
to understand. Yeah.
And they will, you know, repeat what they've heard in third grade about how great Lincoln was and how, you know, George Washington chopped down the cherry tree and this, that, and the other. And it's like, you know, largely myth. And but it's a cultural myth that holds today. And it's one of those things that, you know, you can't really change many people's mind. But I'll tell you one thing, that I was at a book signing a number of years back with, well, I'll just name the author. It was Richard Ford, who's a novelist, and he's one of my favorite novelists. And I've gotten most, if not all, his books and read them. And he's an interesting guy, born in Mississippi, and I think across the street from lived across the street from Eudora Welty, the author, and he moved up, or he went to college at Michigan State, of all places. And, you know, so he was this guy, you know, he's, you know, nominally on the cultural left, but he's got one, he's got some great novels that I really like. The Sports Writer being the first one I read about him, but or by him. But I went to a book signing and somebody in right in front of me was asking this question about Lincoln, because he knew that he had that Ford had some sympathies. You know, he not anti-Southern, because he's definitely a Southern man. But he was like, really, he doesn't embrace the Southern history and Southern culture like my relatives maybe in Middle Tennessee might. Yeah. But anyway, so this guy asked him some question about Lincoln. And he's like, actually, in a very soft spoken way, very polite and very nice.
Southern gentleman.
Yeah. He's like, actually, the more you read about Lincoln, the more you won't like him. Signed the book. And the guy just like, I saw his jaw drop. He wanted to like go, yeah, high five, you know, like Abraham Lincoln. But anyway, so that was a kind of seminal moment in this whole thing where I was like, holy cow, people actually with an open mind will think different things, even though like culturally they're supposed to repeat, you know,
the heck you say open mind. one of the viewers said, thoughts on Lincoln, tall and poor situational awareness in a theater.
That's right.
I mean, and it's not untrue.
That's my friend, Adam Heyman, who, well,
Adam, thanks for stopping by.
Yeah.
And any friend of Brian's is crazy to be over here. No, thanks for stopping by. Now go over there and hit my subscribe button, because somehow I've already lost a viewer.
Oh boy.
I'm just gonna lay that on your doorstep, O'Leary. That's what I'm gonna do.
So I was going to say, not only is he my friend, he's a fellow podcast host, and I think in the show notes you have, this is my first publicly announcing the fact that Adam and I are going to embark.
I wish I had an effects board. We'd do a drum roll.
Yeah, on a podcast, and we hope to launch it probably end of March, early April, and we've already recorded several episodes. And so anyway, yeah, it's going to be like our show is essentially decided we have about four pillars, and they're political philosophy, economics, history, and kind of the meta concepts and structures of human civilization. And we're going to we haven't really decided on the length. It's going to be like a half hour to an hour, probably once or twice a week. So we're looking forward to doing that.
I do need to, since you brought up philosophy, world history, and meta concepts, my co-host of Veteran Nation, I don't know if Skipper is still here. Skipper's a vet, Marine vet. So Skipper will have that when they launch their show, we'll have somebody do CGI cartoons for you so you can understand what they're talking about.
There you go.
I will not hear the end of that one later. No, Skipper's actually a sharp dude. He's out in California where you are as well, except he's further south. Hmm. And then he's out in the desert. Isn't all of California a desert?
A lot of it.
In some way, shape, or form.
I'm right up against the mountains, and we had just a huge snow dump, like over a foot yesterday, like probably 5 miles from where I live, and we just got rain. But then on the other side of the mountains is Santa Cruz, and their beach was covered with snow, like first time in decades.
How far south are you?
I'm just right in the Bay Area, right outside of San Jose.
So that puts you about
halfway down.
Halfway down. So you're south of Oakland and in San Francisco, but north of LA. So where it's still relatively speaking,
Silicon Valley is what they call it.
Still
around here.
Warmer than what we're used to. I was going to ask if you guys got the impending doom of the blizzard that I kept reading about.
No, but the crazy thing is, man, I've lived here for 7 years probably now, and the California weather, it's like normally pretty pleasant in the wintertime. We've had like two of those days since Halloween. It's been like the biggest cold snap, and even people in Southern California are freaking out because it's so cold. And
here comes the climate lockdowns, folks. Yeah.
And it's crazy. Like, it's cold. Like, every morning I come into my office, so-called, my garage, and you know how garages go. That's why you're not in your garage. It's well, that cold.
It's a mess.
Yeah, it's so cold. It's yeah, like, you know, I'm dealing with like 30, 40 degree temperatures for the good portion of the day and until and the opposite is the case in the summertime. I have to do all my work basically from the early morning or the very late evening after everybody goes to sleep because it's sweltering in here. Yeah, so.
You don't have like a little portable air conditioner you can pop
into
your office?
I've got fans, stuff like that. But then if I'm doing a podcast or whatever, it's super loud.
Yeah. So. I have my space heater on and fortunately it's got relatively quiet, but I use the noise dampening effect here in the StreamYard studio, which helps. I want my Minnesota friends that are watching, Sarah, who was, and then my friend Sue, who I mentioned, her and her husband there at the beginning of the show, and their son Garrett. Sue, she says, morning. Did you guys hear that he thinks that 35 is terribly cold? I just want to throw that out there. And another one of your fans is here. She must be. Sally says Brian is great. Yeah. Either that
that's
or
my beautiful
Sally's
mother.
A fan of mine.
That's my beautiful mother.
Ah, there you go. That explains it. I was going to say either it's a fan of mine that I don't know yet who already appreciates you more than me, which is normally I get these comments. Hey, thanks for plugging me into that person. I'm going to listen to them a lot more. I'm like, interesting. What did I do there? Oh, my buddy Katie. My buddy KD is here. Anyway, he says we're chop liver. That's chop liver. Don't forget chop liver. So I know you got to take a little bit of a break here coming up. And I think what we'll do when we do take that break, I think we can both take a break and I'll put a standby screen up.
Sure.
So that everybody who's watching can, you know, run and, you know, get coffee or hot chocolate or use a restroom or whatever they're going to do. And how long do you need to break for?
5 minutes.
All right. Yeah, that's
maybe
perfect.
Less.
I'll top off my coffee at that point. I've never done that in the middle of a show, but I have a screen for it. So I am prepared for all things.
I used to do a live stream about this time every Saturday morning, actually, during the college football season. And this was actually last fall. The night before college football season started. Or it was actually week one. They have games on week zero, so-called, but all the main shows most of the games start week one. And like, it was Friday night. I need to kind of put out more content. So
you just did a stream.
I did a live stream. I learned like on my phone, like learn how to set up a live stream, woke up at 3 a.m, set everything up, and then boom, I was online. But, I did that for 8 or 9 weeks, probably September through October, because I gave myself, at least mentally, and I think I started announcing on the show, it was like, if this is making my life worse, not waking up, I don't mind that, but just like concentrating on college football when I'm having a hard time getting back into it after what they did to us after a few years, and. If it's making it worse for me, I'm going to stop doing it, but I'm going to do it just for the discipline because I love college football and I've loved college football all my life. It's just the fact that today or, nowadays it's dead and or dying anyway. It's a dying institution, dying sport, and it's sad. And that goes with a lot of sport. I'm a huge baseball fan, and that I just see yesterday they started spring training games and the new rules of the pitch clock and all this stuff. It's just like it's kind of a hocus.
Wait a minute,
deal.
I don't even know that much about baseball, but they're putting a pitch clock on now.
Yeah, if you have. There's two. It's like the NFL with their play clock. There's two different ones. So if there's a runner on base, the pitch clock is I can't even remember how many seconds. And they've been doing it in minor league baseball for a few years now. And if there's nobody on base, then you have so many seconds to deliver the ball. And then if the batter is up there horsing around with his batting gloves and knocking dirt off, and stepping out of the box, he can get an automatic strike called on him. And they tried doing this. I remember when I was in high school, one of my buddies, my first game of the year, this is kind of off topic, but one of my buddies, they tried to enforce this, and he's got like a 3-0 count, or 3-1 count, and he steps out. He does all the things with the batting gloves, step out, boom, boom, and then gets back in ready to hit. He got called strike two. just because he stepped out of the box. And then he's like, looked at the umpire and stepped out of the box to look at the umpire. He's like, boom, strike three. And then that's how it's going to go now. I've been seeing clips in college baseball where it's the same thing.
I don't know that that's off topic. I really don't know that that's off topic, considering we've been, I know we've been a little all over the board, but, and when we come back, we'll start to dive more into the philosophy of politics and culture a little bit more. But I don't know that it's completely off topic, because what you're seeing in sports is a conditioning to compliance, and you have to have rules. I mean, society, I mean, if you talk to like anarcho-capitalists, mm-hmm. People who are philosophically anarchists,
not the people in downtown Portland throwing bricks through windows and setting buildings on fire.
Those aren't anarchists. Those are authoritarians. Yeah. They are literally the fascists.
Right.
So they don't want anarchy. They want full control. They just want to be the ones in control. But in society, without this like this weird radical violent version of anarchism that people have in their minds, you have to have some semblance of rules. The problem is that they condition us to an overabundance of rules and regulations by what they put on us, and it starts with things we enjoy, whether we're taking part in a sporting activity or actually watching a sporting activity, or even TV. Mm-hmm. There's just this look at, like, I complain about ads on my own videos when I watch back my streams, which I don't do very often, but I'll complain about it because I want this instant gratification of being able to watch something or listen to things, but they just keep adding and adding and adding stuff on. And what it gears us towards is this idea of pure control.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be this pure control. And
yeah, it's the top down structure.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, and what Sue says, and Sue's a sharp gal, even though she was married to a special operations guy. If they want to keep bread and circuses working well, they have to stop messing with the bread and circuses.
Right.
But that's part of it, is that they're entertaining us, and sports are really kind of today the closest we're going to get to the Colosseum of Rome.
Pretty much. Yeah. Christians versus so much. Yeah.
No, but but that's what they did when they wanted people under control, when they wanted to keep the people from realizing what was going on in society and culture.
Sure.
They threw sporting events at them. Mm-hmm. The Colosseum wasn't always, Christians being killed by gladiators,
chariot races and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how they got people to accept this event over what was going on out here in the greater Roman world. Do you want to take our break now and come back?
Sure. Yeah, it's fine. Okay. So we did take a break, and we'll take a break for a while until we bring up the series again. Thanks to TC, Minnesota Black Robe Regiment podcast, for having us on a few weeks back. I believe it was in February. But anyway, we'll put out the rest of that interview and probably a couple more clips here as we move along in April, more than likely. Got our plate full with a lot of things. And you heard me mention in that show the Natural Order podcast with my friend Adam Heyman, and that, we talked about when it's going to be coming out. And right now our strategy is that it will be coming out next week. That's our strategy. It's been pushed back a couple times, but we're just making it good for you folks. And if you haven't already, just head on over to our Substack, briandoleary.substack.com, and you can go sign up for our email list, and we send out emails every day, and they're all they're usually pretty fun to read, and mostly include the podcast with them. But we're, like I said a couple weeks ago, we're kind of moving our strategy. We've got a lot of strategies on top of each other. So right now, with the just sign up at the Substack and go from there, and we'll once we launch this new podcast, things are. As the dude says, new things have come to light, man. So anyhow, once again, thanks for tuning in. BrianDOleary.com is where you go for all of it. And this is Brian O'Leary signing off. Thank you. Bye-bye.